Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Hey everybody, it's the 254th episode of the Golf Podcast, and we're going to do a little bit of a spin on a very popular recent topic. Not too long ago, we talked about some simple course strategies, not changes in your setup, not changes in your swing, nothing technical here. We're just talking about some course management strategies that you can use to break 100. Well, it was so well received, and there were so many people who reached out to us and said, I want to hear, like, for that next milestone, breaking 90, we decided we're going to dive into it. So that's going to be our topic. We're going to talk about what you guys can do, some little changes you can make to your approach. I've got some things that we can kind of put it in perspective that might help take a little bit of the pressure off if you're somebody who's like right on that line of trying to break 90. And then we'll dive into it. So there's a lot of great stuff to talk about. As always, we've got Mike here with us. What's up, Mike?
Hey, dude, what's going on? Funny story real quick. I'm walking in the office here to sit down with you, and my six-year-old daughter, you can relate to this having a five-year-old daughter. She goes, what are you doing, Daddy? I go, I got to record the podcast. She's like, again? I'm like, yeah. Every Wednesday night since before you were born. Dude, she was so confused, and then I was walking away going, wow, it's been that long. But anyway, feels good, dude. I'm excited because the cold front's coming in, and you and I are heading to the warm front down in Florida, just 4 days away. So I'm like trying to get to the weekend so we can get out of here, but there's just so much to do.
I know. And as always with, you know, travel in New York, we're watching that, watching that weather and hoping our flight gets out, but we should have a lot of great stuff once we get down to Orlando. Lots to talk about. Want to go over some stuff from the Facebook group as well. But before we dive into tonight's topic, you know, as always, want to thank today's show sponsor, ShotScope. The ShotScope V12, it's a GPS watch that also tracks hundreds of stats from your golf game. It all happens automatic. It happens in the background. It's just like magic. And with over 40,000 GPS mapped courses in the ShotScope universe, it's truly the only device you're ever going to need to rely on out there. And Mike, one of my favorite features of that ShotScope technology is this pin collect feature. You and I use it all the time. Yep. What that does, guys, it actually GPS tags the exact pin location for every hole. So it's not just once you get to the green, you're guessing. This has that exact number. So all your proximity to the hole stats, all your putting stats, they're tracked down to the foot. So here's the thing, guys. The ShotScope V2, it's the way to identify those strengths and weaknesses in your golf game. Right, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. And with so many of our listeners and podcast Facebook group members gearing up with the V2 this season, it's been great to see everyone hopping on board. So thank you for that. But the custom Golficity leaderboard, this thing is going to be heating up with all kinds of awesome prizes. I know we keep talking about it, and I know at this point you're like, all right, just shut up and do it. But hey, there's not much we could do now with the cold. But once we break and season starts in like 8 weeks, whatever it is, we're going to start giving away some awesome prizes. So do yourself a favor. Go grab yourself a ShotScope V2. Visit ShotScope.com/Golficity, or do us the favor, try that coupon code at checkout, Golficity, GOLFICITY.
Yeah, and you know what? Just because we're not giving out the prizes yet doesn't mean you can't still jump in, because the ShotScope leaderboard, the Golficity leaderboard is live. It is active, and we're already doing a little bit of playing for bragging rights. So it's having a little bit of fun there. But like Mike said, we're going to sweeten the deal with some prizes coming up real soon. Speaking of prizes, Mike, we've got very close to our first goal of hitting 10,000 subscribers on YouTube.
It happened so fast.
I know. And we've been spending the last month quietly stockpiling a serious, like, lot of stuff for this giveaway, right? I mean, we can't talk too much about it because I want that big surprise, that big unveil. But we got a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. I mean, this thing's going to be pretty big. And we're heading out to Orlando to the PGA show. We're going to be talking to a lot of vendors, meeting new friends. And who knows? This prize list can only just keep growing and growing. Our goal – it's funny. You and I were talking about this, Frank. Our goal is to just set one lucky winner up with, like, the ultimate season kickoff package. I mean, you're going to be set soup to nuts. There's nothing you really need to worry about. And if you get something you already have, you're going to have a ton of cool gifts to give to some people. Yeah. So stay tuned for that. That's That's probably in a couple of weeks we're going to kick that off.
We will. And that prize packet's already well north of $1,000 value. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really fun. And it's our way to give back. Everybody who watches this on YouTube, everybody who listens, we're always looking for ways to give back because we appreciate each and every one of you, tuning into the show each week. Let's talk about, before we head down there to Orlando, let's talk a little bit about our game and where we're at. So a couple of weeks ago, anybody who's following along, we talked about it on the show here, but you saw our video where we went for our lesson with Kevin Sprecher. Since then, we've had a lot of homework to do. So, Mike, how's it been for you, and where do you feel like your game is at headed into Florida?
You know, strange thing. First, I'll give you the negatives. I'm not getting distance off the tee at all. I was in that simulator, and I was I know that the drives are there because I had a handful of, you know, nice distance straight drives, 285, 290, really impressive distance for me. Very impressive that would be. And then I think a majority of the rest of them were like 240, 245. I was kind of chicken winging, you know, my problem. I was going back to old habits. I was swaying too much, wasn't rotating, basically wasn't doing those things that Spreck taught us back when we saw him in November. So then I started to go back to those, and you know, I actually sat on the range for a little bit. I posted a picture of this in the Facebook group that I started to just sit and concentrate and focus on what Kevin told me about rotation and balance, and we've been beating this every single week. But it's important because it's really helped. It's helped a lot of people actually. So I put up the chart, and it showed that my normal shot is I either push it right, I either miss right on a straight push, or I slice it right. You know, it's very rare that I'll hit a draw or anything to the left side. So you saw it, Frank. Everything on that chart was sent straight or left, and there were some nice draws in there. So everything was starting to click. So I have that working for me. I just have to figure out how to get the distance off the tee. Maybe it's my stance, position, balance. I don't know. But that's kind of where I'm at. I feel confident about everything else. Short game's pretty darn good right now.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, we saw when we played – the other day, that cold round, at Wild Turkey, I mean, there was a couple times you had plenty of distance when we were really out there on the course. So I feel like it'll come. It'll, you know, I would say if I had any suggestion, be continue to work on that accuracy and the shot shape you want. And as you become more comfortable with it, I think the distance will follow because the distance is there. You haven't struggled with distance in the past. So right. I don't feel like, you know, a lot of people say that it's hard to teach things like swing speed. You know, I don't feel like that's something that would be tough for you to gear back up. I would say just keep working on that accuracy because it's, and that's something we're going to talk about when we talk about our tips for breaking 90. It's going to be really key there.
Yep.
For me, I'm going to rely on you to help me out with this because when we get down to Orlando, if you start to see me go off the rails, remind me of my tempo. And the reason I say that is, as I'm working through this swing change, which I've talked about here, where I've been spending a lot of time, like Kevin had given me the homework, 5 minutes a day, three or four times a day, you know, with a club, without a club, just going through the motions, just doing the motions and trying to get used to this couple swing changes he gave me. Different ball game, obviously, when you actually start hitting balls. So the first couple were just struggling challenges and whatever. And I was like, listen, as I'm hitting these golf balls, they're kind of all over the place. I'm on the Trackman today, which by the way, if anybody has an opportunity to do this, if you've got a simulator near you, I'd say one of the best things I've done for my golf game in a while was this. Just, I booked an hour session in the simulator, just put it on the range in the Trackman.
Straight range.
Right. And you can get a lot of work in an hour. And if it's just you, like I always like going like with other golf buddies and stuff like that. But that, you know, sometimes you take your head out of it. It becomes like a social thing. I just spent like an hour just straight focus, just me in the simulator working on my swing. And I got a lot accomplished. But going back to what I was saying, the first couple were rough. And what I found was I said to myself, all right, let's just slow all the motions down and see what happens. Like, well, what's the worst that happened? I hit my driver 100 yards. You know, I'll be like, I won't hit it at all because I'll be swinging so slow. Mm-hmm. And I started taking these swings that felt so slow to me, but then I'm looking at the Trackman numbers and my distance is staying the same, if not going up. And then I realized that what I was doing was because my mind was so focused on these three or four motions he gave me, I was kind of like rushing through them and I became so quick. I was getting off balance. And I found this out because a lot of my finishes, I was not able to even stand where I was standing. I was like moving. I was moving to the side. I was falling forward, whatever. And then I realized the things we talk about here, balance being so key. So as I slowed everything down, or at least it felt slower to me, my swing speed with my driver was still between 99 and 100 miles an hour, which is plenty fast for me. You know, it was translating to drives that are about 260 range. Honestly, that's all I need off the tee. And if I
smash factor was legit.
Yeah. Yeah. I transfer the energy well. It's a matter of just, it's generating it. I don't usually generate a ton of, you know, club head speed, but I said to myself, look, I'm just going to, you know, go do this nice and balanced and a little bit slower. And all of a sudden I start to see it, you know, it's, I'm moving the ball better. Plus I found that it was a lot easier for me to do these new motions if I just slowed everything down a bit. So I'm going to keep working on that. I can imagine if you start to see me, like I said, go off the rails, I'm probably getting quick. I got to just slow it down, but
yeah, we'll keep you in check.
That's what you got to do. But I was really impressed with it. I started to hit the ball well. I started to I was working on specific shot of like when I have to hit a fairway shot, I was working on that with the driver. What would I do? How would I change my swing to make sure I could do it? Unlike those, when you get those really wide open fairways, you can just kind of let it go, let it rip, bomb it, whatever. Here I was just trying to just put a cut on it. So it felt good. Things were starting to work for me. It's just a matter of, it almost seems so counterintuitive. Sometimes you feel like you're swinging with a lot less force and effort, and yet the ball travels further. That's where the golf can be a confusing game sometimes. And I think it's primarily because of the fact that when you're in balance and you make a clean strike, that's where that energy gets transferred to the ball. You're able to have more distance. You could be swinging what feels like a million miles an hour. If you're out of balance, you're not hitting the sweet spot, you're all over the club face, you start to work against yourself and lose out. So that's going to be my focus. I'm hoping to bring that into these rounds that we play while we're down there, just smooth, easy, and make contact.
How many swings do you think you get in today?
I had to get in over 100 swings.
How do you feel back-wise?
Yeah, I feel a little bit tight, but it's good. I mean, it's always tough.
Well, that's good.
Walk into this place from it being 20 degrees out with like 10 layers on, and then you go in there and start working up a sweat. You know, it's going to be difficult, especially when you got an hour booked and you're trying to do a whole long stretch session before it. But to me, I just like to keep moving. If I keep moving, I'm good. It's when I sit in front of a desk for 8 hours and then try to go play golf that I'm in trouble.
Yeah, for sure. Sure. Well, it's good that you feel good, especially with 4.5 rounds next week.
Yes.
You know, so it's good that you're in shape for it. All right, cool, man. So what else we got before we hop into tonight's
topic? So the other thing I wanted to highlight, speaking of our journeys and stuff like that, I think you had mentioned this on the show not too long ago. You said, we want to hear a little bit more from everybody out there, the audience, and we want to hear about your journeys a little bit more. So I was really happy to see what our friend Ed D'Tuz is doing with his new segment. So Ed, you know, going way back, started off as a listener of the show, like a lot of people. And then we just started to build a relationship over time. Now he heads up our Facebook group. He's one of our moderators on there. He's also just last year joined the Golficity contributor team. He's done some really great work with some of his articles and some of his videos he's done, but I'm really digging his latest thing. So what he's got going here, and we posted it in the Facebook group, he is going to be documenting his journey. He's calling it From Duffs to Darts on a Dime. He's giving himself roughly 10 months, which is this whole golf season, to get himself down from about a 20 handicap to a 12 handicap. So a lot of strokes he's got to shave there. But what I really like about it is he's going to be documenting it week over week of what he's doing. And he, in one of his articles on Golficity today, he had laid out the groundwork, the plans of how he's going to approach this with specific types of practice. And he's going to be and, you know, I like too that he's realistic about it. Just like a lot of us, we don't all have time. He talked about how he's got an hour commute to work each way and all this other stuff. He's got kids. So he's trying to find the time to practice. He's going to be working a little bit on his lunch breaks. He's going to be doing things like that. So it's very relatable. That's something I like. We're going to be able to follow along and maybe use some of that advice and maybe pick up some tips of ourselves for how we can do it. But also this on a dime part that I really like. So he's going to be talking about how to do a lot of this on a budget, from getting fit for new clubs all the way through like how he's going to do lessons and utilize the internet a little bit more. So I think it's a great, great thing. And I think it's going to be a great case study of how you can improve. And we'll see. I mean, that's a huge improvement in one season. And if he hits his target, I'd say that it's going to be a nice model that a lot of us can follow.
Absolutely. I love the idea, Eddie. I wish you well on this. I'm excited. I'm going to be real excited to see it every week, hopefully, or whenever you put it out. And it's, like you said, relatable. Yeah. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. So check out the, golfficity.com as well. The Golficity app. You'll be able to follow his journey. And we'll be talking about it a little bit in the Facebook group as well, which you can all join for free by just going to Facebook and searching Golficity or the Golf Podcast. That'll pop up. Speaking of the group as well, a couple other shout outs. I see a lot of people getting set up for the season, going for fittings. A lot of times it's a lot of people's first time fitting. So they're asking some questions, some great questions. And it's good to see that, you know, the feedback that we're seeing of a lot of people when they do go for the fitting, they're having really great experiences. There was one that I wanted to shout out, Kyle Gray. So he had mentioned in the group that he was looking to get a fitting. He was talking about going to Club Champion. I told him, you know, I've had nothing but great experiences with Club Champion. We've worked with the local location in Hackensack, New Jersey a few times. I did my putter fitting there. Mm-hmm. I like that they're independent fitters. You know, you get to test a lot of different equipment. But I feel like the caliber of the knowledge there has never let me down. So Kyle just did that today as when we're recording. So check this out, Mike. He said, did his fitting this afternoon. He said, definitely recommend having one done. Fitter was not pushy for a sale, of the clubs and straight up told me that my gamer 3-wood wedges and putters produce better numbers and dispersions than everything else I tried, which is awesome. You know,
yep.
When they're not trying to sell you on anything and just saying, yeah, that works better. Plus I like that. That's a part of a fitting we don't always talk about. You always start with a baseline of your current setup. So there's a chance you keep some of your equipment. And if nothing else, you know, when you walk out of there with a little more confidence that it fits you. Mm-hmm. So he said 174 swings later. Yeah. A full bag fitting can really, you gotta, like we said, you gotta be ready for it. He determined that he needed a new shaft for his driver. He put a 4 hybrid in the bag and he's going with the Titleist AP1 irons.
Sweet.
So
cool.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, if your success with those APs is anywhere near what we've had, you're going to love them because they've been game changers for you and me, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's been a great one. So guys, keep sharing your stories. I love that, you know, in between episodes, getting a chance to chat with everybody in the group. It's one of my favorite things. So great to see everybody out there. Great to see people getting some early rounds in, some fittings, a couple of people, you know, getting to rub it in a little bit that you and I are in this cold weather, not getting to play with by posting some videos of some amazing weather in other areas of the
world.
Yeah,
I know.
Mm-hmm. But I love it all. So guys, keep it coming for sure. All right, Mike, let's do a quick word from our sponsor. And then I want to dive right into tonight's topic where we're going to talk about a couple course strategies you can use to break 90. All right.
So, yeah.
Guys, this episode is sponsored by Titleist. If you're a longtime listener to the show, you know that the TS drivers, which you can see mine right back there in the bag, have dramatically changed the game for us. We're faster. We're both longer off the tee than ever before. Like I said before, I was working on the Trackman today. And even with some of these swing changes and things like that, every drive I hit with that TS2 was 10 to 15 yards longer than what I've hit with any of my previous drivers. You know, I was looking at numbers 260, 270 off the tee. As we've talked about, if you can go back and listen to old episodes, I was in the past always happy with 250. So just having those extra 10, 15, sometimes 20 yards, it's a real game changer for me. And then I can see that in my shot scope stats that I'm more consistent, more accurate off the tee when I'm out on the course as well, far better than in previous seasons, right?
Yeah. And consistency is something that we definitely all crave in this sport. I mean, my THP, I'm finding more fairways and allows me to hit more wedges, you know, into greens as opposed to eights and nines. So that's a really cool thing. I mean, after all, we want to be longer off the tee and we want to shorten the holes and score low, right? So, you know, you start with the driver, start with the TS line, go get fitted, try it. You'll thank us. You know, for free fittings, you could find a Titleist fitter near you and participate in what they call Titleist Thursdays. All you got to do is visit www.titleist.com/locator and search for your nearest fitter.
And you know what? I want to just highlight too that Titleist Thursdays because I've been noticing, I've been answering a lot of questions in the comments, especially we got a couple of questions like for instance, I had an example where one guy had asked, he saw our fitting video and he said, you know, I'm just, you know, high school golfer and stuff like this. Is this something that would work for me? And if you're on a budget, if you're a newer golfer, those Titleist Thursdays, that's what you got to take advantage of, because you get to do all this. You get to try out the equipment. You get to go on the Trackman. You get to go through a legit, real soup to nuts fitting. It doesn't cost you a dime. So check out that locator. Find a Titleist Thursday. It's the first tip that I give everybody when they ask, like, how can I do this? How can I do a similar type of fitting? That's your first place to start. Mm-hmm. And lastly, guys, big thank you to Peter Millar for sponsoring the podcast. When I think of Peter Millar, I think about quality, value, comfort, style. So guys, today I wore my 5-pocket pants. I wore those all day. It's that perfect transition. I knew I was going to be hitting the simulator at lunch, so I wore them to work. They're just, you know, perfect for work, comfortable at the desk, look good, feel good. But then I go transition right to taking about 100 swings in the simulator. Again, comfortable, don't have to worry about, you know, sweating too much. Plenty of room for movement, able to hit the ball. I tell you what, these things are prime.
Yeah, and you know what? I strike out every single time when it comes to buying pants. I just don't know what it is. You know, and then in fact, I think this past week I returned 2 pairs of pants because they just did not feel right. And they were from a competing brand and they were, you know, pretty expensive. And, you know, I really wanted a nice pair. It just didn't work for me. But these 5-pocket pants from Peter Millar, they've quickly become my favorite because they're lightweight. They're highly breathable. We can wear them all summer while we're out on the course playing golf. I love it. I can wear them to the office. They're made from the highest quality cotton and, you know, comfort stretch for easy movement. They fit just like your favorite jeans. I wear them everywhere. You know, you got to stop worrying about what to wear, you know. So go check out Peter Millar. Head over there and use the petermillar.com/golf. Check out some of our favorites. Use the link. PeterMillar.com/golf. Once again, PeterMillar.com/golf. If you use that link, you'll get complimentary shipping and even a free hat, which I think is pretty cool. So definitely go check it out.
Yeah, great stuff. And like I said, I've been wearing these pants now for probably, I don't know, since 6 in the morning. It's about 8:30 at night. Maybe I should. It's too comfortable. I might sleep in them. But anyway, so big thanks to Peter Millar for sponsoring the podcast. So let's jump into tonight's topic. I want to talk about this course strategy because, again, and this comes from by popular demand, so to speak. After we had done our episode, I don't remember the episode number. It was a couple of weeks ago. We had talked about breaking 100 and the approach that you can do to get there. As with that episode, we said, even if that's something that you've blown past, you know, there's still some tips in there that would, you know, everybody can relate to and it can help everybody. Same thing with this. Even if you're still a little ways away from this milestone or if you've passed it, there's stuff in here that pretty much can help everybody. We had done a recent article on it on Golficity as well, which I'll link to in the show notes as always. So you guys can reference that later. But one thing I wanted to do is first gain a little bit of perspective on this. And sometimes, especially when you're a little bit of a way away from breaking 90 for the first time, it can seem like an insurmountable hurdle. So I think sometimes if we can just put this in a little bit of a different perspective, it can help. To break 90, you don't need to do anything outstandingly special out there. And the way I can kind of prove that is just think about it this way. If you're playing a traditional par 72 course, you can be 17 strokes over par and still reach your goal. All right. That's almost a bogey on every single hole. It's all bogeys in one par and still able to do it. So what that does is if we reverse engineer that and we realize, well, what would it take for me just to shoot a bogey on every hole? A large part of that is just saying, well, just keep the ball in play and don't make too many mistakes. It's not like you need to do something outrageous, like bomb big drives to set yourself up for short wedges so you can put it in tight. It's not that type of situation. You're able to do this just by playing a little bit smarter golf and just, again, avoiding getting yourself in trouble. Speaking of which, you know, kind of reminded me going back just because I watched his video and Ed D'Souza, where he talked about his duffs to darts. He had said that he bombs the ball off the tee, but the problem that he was having is he often bombs it about 50 yards into the woods. And that's the thing, you know, he's saying how he hits the ball 280, 290, but 50 yards into the woods. And that's where it kind of shows you. I think this is where a lot of people go off the rails is with these triple bogeys and these blow up holes because you're working against yourself. And I started to do the math a little bit myself too, as I was hitting balls today in the simulator. And I said, okay, if I can hit the ball, if I can drive the ball off the tee about 250 with a nice, easy, smooth, balanced swing, what to me gets me in trouble is when I start to try to stretch that to the 270s, 280s. And I start to get off balance, and it's like, if I could plot the curve of distance versus accuracy, like things go really bad, really quick for me when I get out of my comfort zone. Then I started thinking, well, if I've got like a 400 yard, you know, par four, which is a traditional distance par four for the tees that we would be playing at our handicap right. levels. If I can just put the ball out there 250, that leaves me a 150 yard shot into the green. And I'm more than comfortable at that distance. I love that distance. You know, I'll pull out my 8-iron all day and hit into greens. I don't need to try to stretch that out much further. You know, shoot, if I even don't even connect well with one, I put one out 230 and I got another 20 yards and I got to pull out the 7-iron or the 6-iron instead. You know, it's so much easier to keep the ball and play that way. So I'm going to try to focus on that a lot this year. And I'm going to try to focus on a little bit more smarter play and just, again, avoiding the trouble. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. And I mean, do you remember the first time you broke 90?
No, cause it was a long time ago, honestly.
Yeah. Cause you've been playing a lot way before I have. Yeah. And I want you to ask me if I remember.
Do you remember?
Yeah. June 28th, 2012.
Is that tattooed on your arm?
No, I'll tell you why. I actually, as you were just talking, I was scrolling through my Instagram photos and I remember the day I broke 90, I took a photo and I posted it and it's right here. It has one like. It was 6 years ago.
One like.
And the comment is just 89 exclamation point, June 28, 2012. And it's what's funny though, Frank, is that's actually was the beginning of kind of my journey. I think I was 2 years into golf. I was shooting in the low hundreds, high 90s. And then, you know, it took 2 years. But let me tell you something, 2012, it's not 2018. It has been taking me a lot longer to break 80, which I have not done yet. So it's a harder thing. And I know we're probably going to be talking about that down the road. So,
yeah, well, and that's the truth. It does get exponentially harder. And that's where it starts to require the more and more skill as you get to that level. And that's where, too, if you look at the statistics of number of golfers who have broken different milestones, obviously it goes way down as you start to get below 80 and stuff like that. But here again, it's something that can be accomplished. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of golfers out there who'd be perfectly happy with, you know, just breaking 90 and shooting in the 80s weekend, you know, week in and week out. They'd be very happy with it. Because I think once we start to get lower than that, that the real grind starts to kick in, but it can be done. As you said, you accomplished it in 2 years. It had been a long time. I had, you know, broken 90 a couple times back when I was playing high school golf. I don't remember exactly when, but I was probably the similar type of thing a couple of years into the game. But it really comes down to strategy. And you think strategy is something that it's just like, I don't know, for us, for these ways to break 90. But the reality is, I think as you progress in the game and you get better, more and more you see strategy worked in. And where we had evidence of that is the couple times we've played with pros or teaching pros, we realize how much they really think their way around the golf course. I think when you have newer golfers, what they'll do is they'll go out and they'll think at that shot a lot about their swing and a lot about hitting it straight and stuff like that. And they're so focused on that, their brain is kind of overwhelmed with just making sure that they make good contact, that they stop thinking about strategy.
Right.
And when you get golfers who are a little bit better and they're a little bit more automatic with their swing and they can rely on it more, something shifts where you start to think more about strategy. I remember this when I was, even back in those days when I was playing high school golf, some of the guys who were better guys on, you know, better golfers on the team, I played a round or two with them and where I'm out there just worrying about my swing and worrying about, you know, not slicing the ball. They were out there looking at different areas in the fairway and where they wanted to land it that was going to give them a nice even lie and stuff like that. So it's a thought process of kind of like relooking at it. But sure. I think strategy can come in no matter what level you're at. We talked about it in breaking 100. But if you can start to look at the course in a way of how can I attack this in a way that won't beat me? How can I keep this ball in play? Because trust me, even if you're not able to move the ball huge distances yet, by just keeping it in play, it becomes easier and easier to make those double bogeys and then eventually bogeys and turn those into pars. It's almost difficult to make a triple or quadruple bogey keeping the ball in play the whole way. You know what I mean? Even if you only hit the ball 100 yards each time, let's use a crazy example. If you only hit the ball 100 yards each time, as long as you can keep the ball in play, keep moving it towards that green,
mm-hmm.
four shots, you're there.
Right.
Right? So as opposed to hitting three off the tee because you bombed it into the woods. So
right.
Again, it's all about that playing a little bit smarter. So as a general rule of thumb, what you want to do if you're going to try to break 90, it's talking about making a little bit smarter. Some people might call it more conservative decisions, a little bit smarter decisions. So sure. Is it fun to try to pull off those crazy shots once in a while? Absolutely. But the end of the day, you know, if you tried a shot that maybe you shouldn't have tried and you end up with a 91 or a 92, you're going to kind of regret that approach. And mm-hmm. when I say these crazier shots, I'm not just talking about winding up and trying to kill it off the tee. I'm talking about when you, let's say you do hit a bad shot and you're a little bit blocked out. And then what do we try to do? We try to pull some sort of like crazy Tiger Woods move and thread it through the trees, right?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden we wonder why it hit a branch and it kicked out of bounds. And now we're dropping a ball from there. We're losing distance and yard and strokes. If you can just keep that ball a little bit more, you know, like I said, keep it in play and just take it a little bit of a smarter approach, you're going to find that it's going to help you in those areas. So you don't have to play perfect golf to break 90. As I said before, you can be 17 strokes over par, but it really comes down to being a little bit smarter with every shot decision you make out there.
Yeah, and I want to add to that because there's a lot of listeners who are right in the ballpark here. You know, they're new to the game. They broke 100 before. They're sitting in the 95s, and they really want to break through to the next level. You know, you and I were there at one point, and I think one of the best bits of advice for me now that I'm consistently in the 80s now instead of just getting there a few times a season, now that's kind of where I am. And the reason for it is just I think just lock in on that short game. Really hone those short game skills around the green because, like you said, being conservative off the tee and getting out there 220, 230, you don't need to hit the green every time. And let me tell you something, Mr. 95, you're probably not going to hit the green every time. In fact, you're probably going to hit it 2 to 4 times around. Yep. Right. Let's be realistic. You're probably only hitting 2 to 4 greens around if you're shooting in the 90s, high 90s, mid 90s. So with that being said, if you are deadly around the greens, then you can get up and down, or you can get up and down, miss that putt and make the other one and make that bogey and play that bogey golf you were talking about. And you can shoot 88, 89 all day long. Mm-hmm. You know, so if we're in the off season, I mean, my biggest advice would be to get that short game in tune and, you know, chip in the basement, do whatever it is you have to do, get that feel down. But dude, that's what I'm going to do. Just put a focus on that because for me, maybe that's my next step to get to 79.
Yeah, it could very well be. And there's no denying either the fact that a lot of strokes that are wasted aren't just, I know we like to use that example of bombing it into the woods, but mm-hmm. a lot of wasted strokes happen right around the green. I do a similar type of thing. You know what I mean? You blade your chip and scoot it all the way across the green, or you dive right under the ball and it goes nowhere, you know, whatever it may be, or it takes you 3 shots to get out of the bunker. That's too where, you end up with very slippery slope towards these triple bogeys that really take your chances of breaking 90 away. So as you said, I think it's a solid point. And I think it's something that often is overlooked as if how important that short game is, but it can't be overstated. Go out there, work on those types of things. And the good thing, as you said, is it can be worked on at home.
Right.
So make sure you have that. Make sure you're able to rescue yourself for when things do go wrong by being able to do that when you miss a green and things like that. But even in those areas, you can play a little bit smarter shots. Conservative shots don't always have to be very obvious. It's not always like, oh, lay up here, whatever. Sometimes it's as simple as if you're in a green-sized bunker, just, you know, instead of going after a pin that maybe is on a tight side of the green and right on the other side is another bunker, and there's a chance that you carry it over and go into the other bunker, maybe it's just just get out and get on the green. Aim for the fat part of the green. That's another thing. It's a little bit more of a conservative shot. You don't always have to be pin seeking. You know, I'd rather get out of that greenside bunker and have a 15-foot putt than have to have another bunker shot. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's where things like that can come in, and just if you always look at a shot like, what's the shot that I can pull off here? Rather than thinking, can I pull off this shot? You know? Or, you know, and just kind of like willing yourself to pull it off. Ask yourself, what's the shot that I can pull off here, and then play that shot. Play the shot you're most comfortable with.
Well, your example is the difference between a bogey and a double bogey right there. If you go out of one bunker into another one, now you're back on 15 feet away from the green like you should have been before, from the pin, and now you're trying to make a six to get out of there. So you're absolutely right.
If not worse, because now you're in that other bunker and you're also adding frustration. Because now you're second guessing yourself. You're probably not focused on the shot in front of you because you're still mentally thinking about the shot you just made. Right. And your confidence of getting out of the bunkers is now just tanked to zero because you just didn't get out of that bunker. So that's where, again, it's a lot of times it's a handful of bad decisions that end up adding up to anywhere from 5 to 8 strokes. And that's what's usually keeping people in this 93, 94 range. It doesn't take much.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's just a few things. So another tip that we have is find a club in your bag that you can just call it your fairway club, your go-to fairway club, the club that you can use when you know you need to hit a fairway. And it doesn't necessarily have to be your driver. For me lately, it's been that 4 hybrid. It could be your 3 wood. It could be your 5 iron, whatever it is. If you've got, they're always going to be faced with, no matter what course you're playing, you're always going to be faced with those 1 or 2 holes that, although they're par 4s usually, you know, and they're longer holes, they got a really tight fairway or a really well protected fairway. In those situations, there's a lot of those hazards lurking out there. If you can just pull out another club and that just will get you into that fairway safely, you're going to save yourself a handful of strokes.
Oh yeah.
And we even see this at the pro level. You see guys all the time, and now granted, they've got a ton of length, but they're playing longer courses. We see them on par 4s. They're pulling out less than driver on those holes that are a little bit tighter or those holes that are a little bit trickier, or there's more bunkers in play in certain spots. I think the problem with a lot of newer golfers get into is they default to driver anytime it's something more than a par 3.
Right.
And if you can get away from that thinking and just look at hitting that fairway and whatever it takes to do it, you're going to benefit from it. And
I have to do that more this year. I have to hit more irons off the tee.
Because just from those couple times, even so far this season we've been playing together, it's like, you know, I've been trying to ask that question more. Is this a driver hole? Do we go driver here?
You know, because we love that confidence we have in these drivers now, but we still don't know if it's the right approach.
And that's just it. Like, you got to start to think of it backwards, and you could say like, okay, so let's say I pull out that 4 hybrid instead of my driver. Am I willing to sacrifice about 30 yards of distance for maybe a 40% better chance of hitting the fairway or something like that? A lot of times it's going to return yes. Now, does that mean I think you should always hit this club off of every tee? No. I think to learn to use your driver, you have to use it. So I still think work on it. If it's something that you really struggle with, work on it on the range until, you know, do a range session or two with it until you feel like you're gaining a little more confidence, then start working it back in. But again, you can't approach every hole exactly the same. I mean, the game of golf, I think it's fun. You know, a fun part of it is it being a strategic thinking man's game. So if you just blindly go up to par 4 and you just walk up to the tee box with the driver every time, you're selling yourself short and you're not really enjoying the strategy that comes with this game. Look at your tee shot, assess some of the things that could get you in trouble, some of those little things that can turn that into a quick triple or double bogey, and avoid them. Work the other way, work backwards and whatever. And whatever that may be, it might be if you're the type of person who pushes the ball right, and this happens to be that one hole that runs OB down the whole right side, you know, maybe don't hit the driver on that hole. Or something, you know, because of the fact that you go OB, now you're hitting 3 off the tee. And again, now you're frustrated again. There's a very good chance that next drive off the tee goes in the woods. And now you're what? 5 off the tee. So, and that's where breaking 90 at that point becomes almost impossible and you lose sight of it. So that's where, again, just look for those couple of holes, look for a couple of areas where you can make it just a little bit of giving yourself a better advantage. And then this next point we have, Mike, this kind of goes back to what you were saying with the short game. And it's just really work on taking a little bit easier on the greens. And what we're going to say here really is it comes down to playing it safe. And when putting, that means you got to use a conservative speed in order to avoid those long comeback efforts. And I've said this for a long time on the podcast. Working on speed, I think, is really key to shaving strokes, more so than the read, the break, whatever. If you get the speed right on some of your longer putts, you're going to leave yourself a very makeable second putt. Even if you miss the break a little bit or whatever it may be, if you get that speed right, you're still going to be close. And that's something we see on the PGA Tour level. These guys, I was watching them last weekend, at the Sony, some of these guys with some incredibly long putts, and then, you see that camera angle that just keeps zooming in as they get closer and closer.
Right.
And even though they don't make it, they're very close. It's because they're getting that speed so right. And this is something you can work on the practice green or whatever it may be. But if you're setting your sights on breaking 90, the idea is to put, to roll the ball towards that hole, try, on those longer putts, 12 feet plus, just worry about, and we've seen those drills before where you put a little circle around it and you try to get it within that gimme, so to speak, range, gimme or tap in, whatever you want to call that range. If you just focus on that, a lot of times we see people who will they're always trying to hole it and they're powering it way past, or they don't get the speed right and it goes a little bit past and catches a hill. And now you've got an 8 foot comeback. That's where a lot of, again, strokes are just kind of it's those frustrating. When they say golf is a frustrating game, this is where that comes from. It's those frustrating leaves that you're just worried about making a two putt, not walking out of there with a three putt. So that's where you can really get some improvement. So think first and foremost about getting the speed right. Obviously put a good read on it, but if you can really focus on that speed, it's going to help you. And as I said, even if you miss by a little bit, that speed is going to give you that short putt for your save. You get out of there. And again, there's another experiment. Try to get out of there two putts every hole. Again, you're getting yourself closer to the 90 that you want to be at. So as you get better at this, then you can start to progress towards those next milestones, breaking 80 and things like that. We'll talk about that more. But it really comes down to, if we simplify this down as much as we can, it comes down to not getting yourself in trouble by playing a little bit more conservatively, playing the shots you know how to play, and not taking one bad shot or one bad problem and making it worse by trying to continually pull off harder and harder shots that you can't do to try to make up for one or two errors. If you make an error, do the safest play, get it back in play, just keep the ball in play. Think about it. Most of the time when you play a really good round, what do? You say, wow, I played with the same ball. I didn't lose this ball the whole time.
Right.
Right? It's because you kept it in play. If you keep it in play, it's going to show on the scorecard.
That's for sure. Couldn't agree anymore.
Yeah. So give it a go, guys. Let us know what you think, as always, in the Facebook group. You can also hit us on social, tweet us, send us a message on Instagram. Or if you're not a social media person and you like to just use old fashioned email, you can always email us at podcast@golfficity.com. We try to get back to as many of those as we can. But let us know, is there some sort of strategy? Is there something you've used in the past? How has it worked for you? And has it helped you reach your milestone? Because that's what we're all about, is just ticking off those milestones and getting a little bit better, day by day. So, anything else, Mike, before we wrap this one up?
No, man, let's just get our stuff together. Let's get out on the course, man. I'm so excited.
I know. I'm so excited to be playing again too. I'm excited to be doing some more course vlogs and videos and bringing those out for you guys, as well as we'll have a little fun on the Instagram stories and the Snapchat stories. So make sure you guys are following along there. It's easy. The handle is Golficity, @Golficity on every single one of those platforms. We're easy to find. So, and speaking of which, if we run into you guys, we've been running to more and more people when we're out there at the courses and stuff like that. Always make sure you guys say hi. We love talking golf. We love saying hi. So, we'll see you guys out there, and we'll see you in the Facebook group. Talk to you next week.